Welcome to Today on Broadway for Thursday, December 28th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini. Since we are still in the slow news period of the holidays, James and I had originally planned on simply running the audio from an interview I did with the phenomenal Donna Lynn Champlin before the second season of her TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend debuted back in October. She is delightful and sweet and a breath of fresh air, which we obviously really need right now. We will get to that conversation in just a few minutes, but first, to the crippling gut punch news of yesterday. Just a day after the untimely passing of her daughter Carrie Fisher, the Hollywood legend and beloved song and dance woman Debbie Reynolds reportedly suffered a stroke and passed away on Wednesday at the age of 84. Already under contract with MGM, Reynolds became a massive star as Kathy Seldon in 1952's iconic Compton and Green movie musical Singin' in the Rain, opposite Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor. She went on to appear in the films The Affairs of Dobie Gillis, The Catered Affair, which was turned into a Broadway musical in 2008, Tammy and the Bachelor, The Unsinkable Molly Brown, for which she was Oscar nominated, The Singing Nun, Divorce American Style, Mother, and many, many more. She was also a regular on television. In addition to her own NBC sitcom, The Debbie Reynolds Show, she was a recurring character on Wings, Roseanne, and Will and Grace, where she played Deborah Messing's mother and earned an Emmy nomination in 2000. Reynolds made her Broadway debut in 1973 in the revival of the classic musical Irene, and as we mentioned yesterday, the production also marked the Broadway debut of a teenaged Carrie Fisher as well. Reynolds was nominated for a Best Actress and a Musical Tony for her performance. She also had a revue concert that played a limited run on Broadway in 1976 called Debbie, and she replaced Raquel Welch in Woman of the Year in 1983. Reynolds also toured with Annie Get Your Gun and The Unsinkable Molly Brown back in the days when stars of her stature still toured. In her career, she was nominated for 4 Golden Globes, 2 Emmys, and an Academy Award, and she won a National Board of Review Award, 2 American Comedy Awards, and was presented with the Screen Actors Guild Lifetime Achievement Award in 2014, and the Academy Awards Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award in 2015. In addition to her successes on stage and screen, Reynolds was a prolific businesswoman. She owned a Las Vegas hotel for many years, her LA dance studio is still running, and she was one of the most important collectors and protectors of Hollywood artifacts and memorabilia there has ever been. Even though she eventually sold much of her collection, she did hang on to those original ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz. Debbie Reynolds was survived by her son Todd Fisher and her granddaughter, Carrie Fisher's daughter, actress Billie Lord. Just as with her daughter Carrie, Debbie Reynolds was one of a kind, and her talent will never not be a source of joy and optimism for millions of fans around the world, myself included. Godspeed, Debbie Reynolds. Okay, after that heartbreaking news, I think we all deserve to hear from one of the most giving, talented, and sweet people working in show business today, Donna Lynn Champlin. She made her Broadway debut in James Joyce's The Dead in 2000, then appeared in By Jeeves and Hollywood Arms, all 3 huge Broadway hits, obviously, before playing Signor Pirelli in the 2005 John Doyle revival of Sweeney Todd. She also replaced in Billy Elliot on Broadway as well. Donna Lynn is also a 4-time national tap dance champion, which will come up in a question I ask her in the interview. Donna Lynn has also been in many off-Broadway and regional productions, and even though I can't believe I didn't ask her about it in the interview, I'm going to have to do it next time I talk to her. She was fantastic and a bit terrifying in the hilarious web series Submissions Only. You can now see her as Paula in the Emmy-winning and critically acclaimed musical dark comedy? I never really know how to explain this show. The TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. A few months ago, I had the opportunity to speak with Donna Lynn about the show's second season while she was in New York for a short hiatus from filming in California. We had a few phone issues that I was able to edit out for your benefit, but otherwise it was a perfect, exciting, and insightful conversation. I'll put a link to the Broadway World article that came from this interview into the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com so you can check that out if you would like. Okay, here's our conversation.
Hey, Matt, it's Donna Lynn.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry. You know, we're on a hiatus this week, and you know, we've been away from our place in New York, and of course, you know, when you come back after being gone for months, like, everything's busted.
Of course. Yeah, no, totally understand. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Oh, sure. No, I'm happy to. How are things at Broadway World?
Things are good. It's getting into that time of the year when all the openings and stuff make it a little more crazy than normal, but I know you know that time of year all too well.
I do.
first off, congratulations on season two premiering next week. It's really exciting. Like, there's a lot of people that are super pumped about this.
Yeah, and God bless Netflix.
Yeah.
And, and you know, the two Emmys that we won for choreography and editing, that didn't hurt either. No. So it's really exciting to sort of get a season two at all.
Yeah, well,
and then you have people actually know that we're premiering. It's very different than last year.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Like, I assume fairly on early in the process, as you started to get involved with the show, I assume you knew, oh, okay, this is good. But did you have any idea that it would be this well received by either critics or audiences or anybody at all?
No. Uh-uh. Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you know how it is, like, especially coming from the theater, you know, just because something's good
right.
doesn't mean that people, you know, will respond. Just because I love something, just because I read it and go, oh my God, this is hilarious, you know, doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, I like to say I usually do, like, the shows that, like, changes 10 people's lives, and then the rest of people are like, are the tickets for Wicked? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, you know, I sort of don't have expectations. I certainly didn't have any expectations about this world of television because I don't know it very well.
Yeah. Well, and that's something that I know you've done, you know, a lot of the shows that are based in New York. I know you've done, you know, I think you've done a couple guest spots on Law and Order or whatever, but, like, this is a huge move, like you said, moving across country and leaving New York. But, like, this is, I believe it's your first real major television role. Was that exciting at this point in your career, having done all these shows in New York and regionally? Or was it like, oh, what am I getting myself into? I'm leaving something I'm very familiar with.
It was both. It was both. I was excited and scared.
Yeah, very nice.
It was very exciting because being, you know, in my mid-40s now and having an entire career in the theater.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, well, I could walk into it with a certain sort of confidence. Just because I have this, and it could be like, you know, I'll go, I'll do this thing. If I'm horrible at it, I'll just come back, you know, and keep doing what I'm doing. But I was, you know, it's funny logistically, working on a television show and a television set and just like hitting your mark and, you know, leaning to the right and knowing where the camera is and wide shots and, you know, turnarounds. And I mean, I literally felt like I was on another planet. I was very, very, very lucky because, you know, everyone involved from the top down, they were so generous with me, especially, because I, for the first three or four episodes, I ruined a bunch of shots because I literally didn't know what I was doing purely technically.
Right.
The acting I'm never worried about. But it's so strange that on camera work is so much more technical than theater work, which I would have never thought in a million years.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, everyone was really cool with me and now it's great. I mean, I feel like I still have a lot to learn, but I, you know, going into a season two, I feel, you know, like I know technically
right.
what I'm doing now. I don't mess up so many shots.
So many. Still some, but not so, so many.
So very many
yeah.
in the first season. Yeah.
Well, in the first season, like, with all due respect to Rebecca Bunch, like, I really felt like in a lot of ways, the season was Paula's because she really kind of fueled the quote-unquote crazy, and I know that's a touchy word for a lot of people in the show's title, but, like, she kind of fueled that crazy side of Rebecca. Now that Rebecca and Josh's relationship seems to be in a kind of a new place, where does that leave Paula in season two? We know you're hitting your marks technically, but where is your character now that things have kind of changed?
Well, it's really a fascinating season. The whole mission statement for this season is, who are you? And if you don't like who you are, can you change who you are? How do you change who you are? So this whole season, we've shot up until, we've got 13 episodes. We've shot up until episode 8.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's been really fascinating for all of us because every character has a degree of this going on in their lives. And so it's every department has had a lot of fun, you know, from costumes to the writer's room to the choreography, where everyone has kind of figured out who they are by a certain level of honesty. Because last season was all about lying to yourself and lying to other people.
Yeah.
And this season, now that she's told the truth in that last episode, I moved her for you. Now this season is all about, you know, who am I actually when I'm not lying to myself, when I'm not lying to others, and I'm not living vicariously through other people? Who am I? And so it's been a really fascinating season, and it's been a lot of fun. There's been a lot of mixing and matching of characters as well. Hmm. I'm especially excited because I don't really, especially in season one, I didn't really hang out with any woman except for Rachel.
Right.
And so this season, like, I crossed paths with Gabrielle and Vela, and, you know, we all...
Yeah.
I had some lady time, which was incredibly exciting for me because I'm usually with all my boys in my family or with Rachel.
That's awesome.
So it's been a really nice sort of in that sort of pursuit of who am I in the world and what does that do to my friendships, and if I change who I am, does that change my friendships? It's been a really fun shakeup. As far as we've got some new characters and stuff. I think I'm allowed to say, it's so tricky because I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say, but I think I'm allowed to say that Paula does sort of hold to her, was in the last episode finale of season one, she says, I'm done telling you what to do. And she does kind of hold on to that.
Good.
Which has been fun. For me, you know, Paul really wants to tell her what to do. And the writers have been fantastic.
Yeah, well, I noticed in a lot of the trailers and the stuff that's been released, we do see Paula with her husband a little bit more, which I loved that relationship in the first season because it's kind of like a microcosm of the show as a whole. Like, you think you know what's going on here, you think you know where this is going to go, but then everything, like, gets turned in a completely different direction, and it's a lot more entertaining and satisfying than you thought it was going to be. You thought it was just going to be like, oh, that's an old TV trope. I understand the husband and wife have been married for a while and don't really get along, but it was so much more than that after the fact.
And they really have explored that a lot because they did realize in season one people were really responding to that relationship and what they were doing with that relationship, which is exactly what you just said. They, you know, they think they take you down the garden path and then they, you know, throw a grenade in front of you. And they do plenty more of that in season two, especially Paula. Paula has a lot going on in the home life, in combination with trying to, follow her own path, career wise. And so Paula just has a lot going on.
Fair enough. Yeah, don't get any trouble with giving away spoilers, but that's good. Paula's got a lot going on. That's the headline right there.
She has a lot going on. And I've only shot to like episode 8. We still have like five more episodes.
Yeah.
But it's funny, like every time that I get an episode, I'd be like, woo, wow. Okay.
We're going there.
Oh, we are going there in an election year. All right.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Okay. All right.
You know?
That's good. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. I want to get something that you mentioned. You're getting some girl time this year, but over this past summer, you had a lot of girl time in Central Park with Taming of the Shrew, and you just had this incredible cast of women doing an all-female version of Taming of the Shrew. What was that experience like? Was this your first time at the Delacorte?
No, I had done As You Like It.
Okay.
I think three years prior with Dan Sullivan.
Right.
And Oliver was my touchstone. I was Audrey, and okay. he was touchstone, and I was his Audrey. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, gotcha.
So it was really nice to come back because when I had done As You Like It, I think my son was like 8 months old, so I was still like in that fever dream place of like, what's happening in my life? Am I even awake?
Yeah.
So it was really kind of fun to just come back to the Delacorte, having had a decent night's sleep on a regular basis. And it really was a fantastic production. It was such a great group of ladies. Phyllida Lloyd is like probably the sweetest person on the planet. It was really a fantastic experience. I remember I was in California last year wrapping up season one, mm-hmm. and I saw on, I think it was Broadway World, there was an announcement about the production, and I immediately emailed my agent and was like, I don't care.
What do you know, have to do?
I was like, I will fly back, I will do whatever, but I need to audition for this. And so I put my, they said, okay, put yourself on tape. They said, what part do you want to play? And I said, well, I think Grumio, the servant, I think that's probably my jam. I'm not really, you know, I said, I'm familiar with the play, but obviously I'm not familiar with the play enough because there's only like two women in it, neither of which I would ever play. I would never play Kate. I would never play Bianca. So I'm not really familiar with with all of the roles. That was interesting just in itself to reread the play and as a woman and look at all the roles and know that all the roles were up for grabs. It was so crazy.
Yeah. This isn't the only all-female production of a Shakespeare show that's been happening in the past, you know, 6 months or whatever, whether it was, I think there was another one in New York there. I mean, Phyllida Lloyd has done it in London as well. So I mean, like, this seems like this is a thing. And I guess if Shakespeare could do his shows with all guys, it finally, you know, turns around and it makes sense to kind of at least try it with all women. I think some of them might work better than others, but it seems like, it's based on all of the reviews and everyone that I know that saw it. This is one that worked pretty well.
Well, it was, I mean, it's really interesting because I think, yes, you're right, because they were, you know, all one gender when they were originally done, you know, doing it with all women really does add a layer in some ways and strip away a layer. You know what I mean? There's so many fun things that we can do as women. I mean, the difference is that I think, you know, when they were originally obviously produced, the men, because no one, it was the norm, there was no extra layer of any sort of gender politics put on because no one thought twice about it because women just weren't allowed to do it.
Right.
Whereas, of course, now, you know, if you have a cast, because they did a Taming of the Shrew with all men in D.C., like right after we did.
Oh, really?
You know. Yeah, I think Billy. I don't know. I think Billy Porter played Kate.
That sounds familiar,
right? But now you know you are making a statement just by casting all women, regardless. You're making a statement, and I think for us in the rehearsal room, especially because Shrew is such a can be such a misogynistic play. We were constantly discussing, you know, what does it mean for us to be women and how can we use this to our own advantage and how can we not abuse this? You know, because the last thing we wanted to do was to go up there and be like, you know, men suck. look at all the horrible men. You know, that was really the last thing we wanted to do. And we did a lot of exercises, a lot of physicality, a lot of stuff in the rehearsal room of like, what's it like to be a man? You know, what's it like to take up space like a man? You know, when you get on the subway today, everybody do an exercise and sit like a man, you know. And on the one hand, we all actually became much, I don't want to say braver, but like more outspoken, more honest. We apologized less. And it actually made us appreciate men, you know, in a lot of ways, in a ways that like as women, we're like, you know, I appreciate the fact that a lot of guys, you know, will not apologize for something they don't need to apologize for. You know? So, and it was very, you know, it's very, very tricky. I think we went through, like, oh gosh, 7 different ways to end the play. As far as the relationship between Petruchio and Kate, and but we were constantly aware, taking the temperature of, as women, we can actually get away with more brutality because at the end of the day, everyone knows we're women. Like, it's so much more scary to see an actual Petruchio throw around, you know, an actual guy playing Petruchio throw around and a woman playing Kate. But if you've got a Petruchio that you know is a woman, you know, as much as we try to make you forget, we can go further because no one is really entirely uncomfortable watching a big man throw around a small woman. Because you've got a really tall lady throwing around another lady, then you can really lean into it because then it can be funny. So that was the fascinating thing, was constantly testing our limits and our freedoms doing it with all women. How far can we go that men could not go? They would not dare go. But we can because it's okay because it's a bunch of chicks, you know?
Yeah. Women on women violence is a lot different than man on women violence. So, all right, we can laugh at that.
And also, but sort of watching it as well, there's something that kind of makes it okay.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we kind of learned during the preview process as we kept kind of going further and further and further.
Hmm. That's really interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, to get back to Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I just have a couple questions here real quick, and I'll let you go. I'm sure you want to enjoy your time back home, but you mentioned in the first season you spent a lot of time with Rachel. That's just, you were just in a lot of scenes with her. She's obviously, you know, she's been gotten all these awards, and she's, you know, creating the show. What has your experience with her been? I mean, obviously, this is her project in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously, she's not the only one involved, but to kind of be at her side while this thing has kind of become a thing, what has that been like?
Well, I mean, I have to say she's fantastic. She's an amazing gal. She's clearly brilliant. I mean, that's obvious. Yeah. She's just prolifically brilliant. But she is so incredibly kind and funny and there's no ego. I mean, in a way, I wish she had a little more ego. Do you know what I mean? Like, she really set the tone. Our set, you know, we don't really realize this until halfway through, but guest stars were starting to sort of clamor to be on our show about halfway through season one. And that was because word had gotten out that our set, I mean, our show was fun, but our set was so happy and positive and funny, and people just wanted to come and do a day or two on it. And that really does trickle down from Rachel.
Yeah.
You know, she sets the bar, she sets the tone, and she has created this environment which is just so incredibly supportive, and you know, people are allowed to improv, and people are allowed to offer their thoughts, you know, and just be like, what about this line, and can I do a version where it's this, and what do you think about that, and she's always like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, to wrap up, my one hope for season two is that we see more of Paula tap dancing. I think we need more tap dancing from you.
Oh, well, okay, here's the thing. There is tap dancing, but at the moment, I'm not doing it.
Oh.
Okay, now hear me out. Hear me out, though, because I really wanted to as well. Now, look, we've got 5 more episodes. They might throw something in. I don't think so, but they came up with such a brilliant idea for a tap number for the boys and Rachel. And when I heard about it, I called Rachel and I was like, Well, you know, there can only be only one dad member. Why? 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 And she was like, okay. She was like, let me just tell you. She's like, I know. She's like, I know. She said, but let me just tell you the idea that we had for the tap member. And then she told me the idea, and it's so unbelievably funny and brilliant that I literally had to be like, you're right. You're totally right. Okay. Now, look, I don't know. I literally don't know what's coming down the pike. So I don't know what's happening in 209, you know, 210, 211, 212, 213. They may throw me something. But I will say, though, that the princess number that I get in episode 2, which I has already, there's pictures. People know that it's happening. Yeah. That was because I had made a request. Because I'm actually a soprano. No one knows this. But I'm actually a soprano who just belts her face off because I gotta, like, pay my rent. But I'm actually, like, you know, a high soprano. And so I said to them, I would really love to sing something soprano. And it doesn't have to be beautiful. It can be like, you know, you can put like Valkyrie horns on me and I can get mad at somebody and, you know, Wagner the shit out of someone. I don't care. I said, I just would love to just sing above in a legit placement above a C. Could you please? And, you know, they were like, you know, oh, okay. And then they came out with this princess number, which I was so thrilled by because I, of course, was looking at the how can I sing soprano and have it be funny and aggressive and Paula and, you know, angry.
Yeah.
And they gave me this, you know, this princess number, which was so kind of what I always wanted but didn't even dare to ask for.
Yeah.
So once they kind of gave me that number, I was kind of like, well, everything else is icing, you know, like I got the princess number. So whatever else you guys throw me,
hey, I'll do
tap
whatever
number,
else,
yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm still holding out, but I guess if it's okay with you, I don't really have any right to be angry about it. So we'll
I'm
see.
Just saying I was upset. And then when it was explained to me, the TAF number that was put in place, I mean, I literally was like, oh, yeah, no, there's no, it's a no-brainer. It's a no contest. You had to do it. You had to do that number.
Okay. All right. I trust you. Well,
I mean, I haven't seen it, but I have, you know, I've seen it on paper. I haven't seen it, but it was a really funny idea.
All right. Well, Donalyn, thank you so much for taking the time to do this, and I'm sorry for all of the phone issues that we've had. This has been a little more hectic than I thought we probably anticipated, but I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, of course. Anytime for Broadway World. I love you guys. You guys are the best.
Well, I'm going to hold you to that because I have a feeling that this season's going to be a lot of fun, so I might be checking in with you again.
Yay! Please do. I'd love to talk to you again. It'll be great.
Awesome. Thanks so much, and have a good week or so. How long are you in New York?
We got here Friday, and then we have to go back Friday. Okay. So, a week.
All right. Well, enjoy yourself.
Thanks, honey. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.